Welcome to Red Sox Digest, the only show where pain, sarcasm, and a dash of hope collide nightly like a Trevor Story strikeout. We cover every loss, every meltdown, and yes, even the rare win with brutally honest takes and zero front office fluff. Subscribe today at RedSoxDigest.com or risk being left out in the cold like a home game in April. And now, here's the crew at Red Sox Digest.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Red Sox Digest Live. Today is July 1st, 2025, and your Boston Red Sox are a combined 42-44 on the season. My name is Jim Delfino, and I am your host for this evening. I'm joined tonight by Nick Face and Nick Diamond tonight. How you guys doing tonight?
I just feel like I'm that second banana in that middle. But I also feel like we've been sent to the principal's office from being suspended here, having to watch this game, and now pick it up again tomorrow. In a way, it's kind of like a doubleheader. I didn't expect this whole rain delay thing to suspend the game. I did not expect that. And they were off to a pretty good start tonight.
Nick, your take.
You know, at least if they're going to have a rain delay in a game that gets suspended, it's a Dick Fitz start. It's not about Brian Bayo's start. It's not a Garrett Crochet start. You're not wasting one of your big time, one of your better arms. So if you're going to miss or if you're going to lose a guy, you're going to lose a Dick Fitz, who you're really, really comfortable going one or two times to the order. So if you look at it that way, it might be somewhat of a positive. He was starting to falter there a little bit at the end there when it went to 2-1. So, you know, it might be a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, I think I read a stat, or it was on the broadcast. Is he the only guy to start a career and have a sub-6 ERA and not have a victory? Did I hear that correctly?
You did hear it. It was 0-10, I believe, or 0-8 or something like that. I heard that earlier, and I kind of shook my head in disgrace. I'm like, yep, leave it to this team to put something up statistically like that.
You know, the bottom line, he hasn't been that bad of a pitcher. I mean, from what I've seen of him, he had one, I think, really bad outing. But other than that, he's been pretty serviceable. Do you agree or disagree?
I think he's fine. I don't like seeing him go deep into games. I think once he goes one or two times through the order, I think the teams figure him out. And the velocity kind of dips. He was within 98 today, which is really awesome to see from him. But that doesn't really – he doesn't sustain it throughout the whole start. Like, once he – goes through like the fourth and fifth inning, you can start to see that velocity dip. So I think he's great as an opener or a long reliever. But in the long run, I don't want him in the starting rotation.
Yeah, I worry about that too. You know, if he's not going to have the ability to, you know, get guys out on the third run through a lineup, it's going to be a problem. And maybe he's better suited for either, you know, a long relief, two inning, you know, Garrett Whitlock type outing. Or maybe even just a one-inning outing like a Weiser type of thing. Be interesting to see how that plays out. I did want to talk a little bit about last night's game. And amazing how the Red Sox are, I believe, fifth in run differential, but yet they have a losing record. I mean, it's almost impossible to do that. But with that said, Abreu had one hell of an evening. I believe he was only the sixth player in history to pull off what he did, and that was a grand slam in the eighth, and then he had the inside the park home run, which we all know is more of a trick than anything, because things just have to break right, especially in Fenway Park, you know, when the ball clanks around like a pinball machine. Do you think he's due for a breakout, or do you think it was just, you know, a regular night for him? Nick Face, your reactions.
I just think it was a regular old night for him. I still haven't made my mind up yet on what the sky is, what the sky's the limit's going to be with Willie Abreu. I don't know if he's going to translate to a full-time, everyday right fielder here for this team, because I still see too many holes in his swing. And the fact that he doesn't really hit that much against left-handed pitching scares me. You know, I know we went through the whole Trotnick-Gabe Kapler platoon routine back in, what, 2003 into 05 or whatever it was. But I'm just kind of done with this. If Willie Abreu was only going to be your right-handed thumper, I think I feel like I need more. I'm not fully satisfied. I'm not fully there yet with Willier. I'm not going to take away what he did last night. That was pretty spectacular. And I believe it was the first time this happened for a Red Sox player since Pokey Reese in 2004.
Big Diamond, your reaction?
You know, it's super exciting to see Willier Abreu kind of come out of a little bit of a slump here. And maybe if he – I know he's a super streaky player, and if he gets going, he can carry this offense for a few weeks. I have no problem with slotting Willier Abreu as the everyday right fielder. And as of right now, he's given me more production than Jarren Duran. I know Jarren Duran had a home run in yesterday's game. He led off today's game with a double. But as of right now, Willier Abreu has given me more consistency, more power upside. And I think I'd rather stick with Willier long term over Duran if I had to pick between the two. And that's probably where I would go at this or this deadline. I would probably pick to keep Willier, even if he has the lefty issues. He also has a little bit of an issue of hitting high velocity. I just think he has more power upside, and his game profiles better long-term over Jarren Duran, where he doesn't rely solely on his legs, beating or stretching singles into doubles. He has more of a power-based profile. So I think I'd rather have Willier long-term, and good for him. I think it was the first grand slam and inside the park or at Fenway Park, and they're not be the same thing. So it was like an inside the park grand slam.
I think you're right.
For them to be separate was 1939. So I think that was.
I saw that stat at there Fenway. Too. Yeah, I saw that stat up there too. I'm sorry, God forbid. I can't remember what the guy's name was, but I believe that is 100% right from Nick as well too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't really see Jarren Duran as a long-term piece here, to Nick's point. You know, I still think there's a really good possibility he's traded. We all know it's not a secret that if his legs give out on him or, you know, something happens, he's not going to be able to say, all right, look, I can't steal bases anymore. I'm going to just become a prolific power hitter. I mean, look at Hanley Ramirez, who used to be stealing bases as a rookie and then turned more into a power hitting bat. Barry Bonds. I mean, the list goes on of those types of guys. And I think, you know, to your point, Abreu could be a more serviceable right field piece for a sustainable future than Jarren Duran is. And plus, you know, make no mistake, Jarren Duran is not a kid anymore. You know, we keep kind of thinking like he's part of the future. He's, what, 29 now?
Hey, that's still young.
Hey, I mean, it's young to me. It's a child to me. But, you know, the point is in baseball, you know, it's not, he's not a 20-year-old. He's not a 21-year-old anymore. So, you know, I mean, his time is probably very close to ending with the Red Sox. And even if they keep him for the duration of his, you know, pre-arbitration and arbitration years, he's got, what, 3 years left? You know, he's not going to be a long-term piece here. Nick Face, what do you think of Duran, and what do you think of Abreu's night last night?
Just on Duran's case, I think Duran's days are numbered, no doubt. I like I said on the last pod that we were on from today, his season's been terrible. I'm sorry to be honest and just tell you, but it has been completely unacceptable. The amount of issues that we have had, whether it was swinging through pitches, I feel like if someone's going to attack him, if you just go upstairs with him, you're going to strike him out every time. It's a hole in his swing. Why it hasn't been addressed, I have no idea. The guy has one of the fastest set of wheels in baseball. Why he is not dropping down bunts just to get on base and wreck havoc on the base paths, it blows my mind. I don't give a crap if Alex Cora doesn't like it or whatnot. That's a skill set that is not being utilized by Duran. I don't care how jacked he is. I don't care. I want to win ball games. And his skill set that he has, in my opinion, is not getting used enough at the right point and at the right stages here with this team. And that is one of the reasons, in my eyes, this team has struggled so much. When he gets on, he's a catalyst. Started out tonight. Look what happens. Duran gets on base. What happens next? Roman Anthony. Nice rip right down the left field side, 1-0 early on. He's a table setter, and it hasn't happened enough at all this season. And he's a big reason why this team has struggled so much.
Yeah, definitely. Next thing that I want to talk about, the Reds pitched Chase Burns in that game yesterday. He is their one of their number one top prospects pitchers. He lasted 1/3 of an inning, gave up 7 runs. I believe 5 of them were earned. And I think he's the second pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball to allow 7+ runs in less than an inning in Fenway within the first couple starts of a career. Was he tipping pitches or not? I know there was a lot that was being said about it. Francona had a funny in what he had said, that it's possible and that, you know, Alex Cora is the best at being able to pick that up. And whether he was being just sarcastic about it or he was being commending, I don't know. But Nick Diamond, what's your thoughts on Burns? Was he tipping pitches? What's your take on that?
I think there's no doubt in my mind that he was tipping pitches some way. See when Duran went after he had that leadoff walk, came around the bases. I think he was talking to Marcelo Meyer, giving him some sort of tips about what he was tipping. The whole dugout saw it. They were all over him. Chase Burns is throwing 100 miles per hour with wicked 89 mile per hour sliders that were nasty, and they were crushing them. Trevor Story hit a bomb like 420 straightaway center. They 100% knew what was coming, at least had some sort of idea. Chase Burns is too talented to get that hit that hard. I think it was a second major league start. I know rookies can be intimidated, could throw the ball right down the middle, but this is a guy way too talented to get hit that hard. The Red Sox knew what was coming. And I definitely think Terry Francona meant to throw a little bit of shade at like Alex Cora and the sign stealing issues in the past with the Astros and even the Red Sox. But I also think Alex Cora is very good at that, picking up on pitchers, tipping pitches, and he's related to his players. Duran saw it first. He was the leadoff guy, and he instantly went to Marcelo Meyer on deck or after he scored and told what he saw. So it's credit to the offense, but also I don't give as much credit because they kind of knew what was coming. But good teams figure out things like that, and they took advantage of a pitcher that has a lot of inexperience. They did exactly what they needed to do. But you know what? Credit to the Reds to battle back against Crochet. It showed what they could do too. So I just like to see it kind of carry over to Brady Singer today.
Nick Face, your thoughts on last night's pitching?
I think Nick and I, we speak the same language, which I think is pretty cool. But I have the same opinion. That is 100% from Terry Francona. That was no shade. He was being honest there. The Red Sox biggest skill set, we all know what Alex Cora has been up to between banging drums or Apple Watches or doing whatever it is to get a competitive advantage. The Red Sox have a terrible reputation right now of doing things that are shady. They just are. Is it illegal? No. But I would just say that at the end of the day, teams know. There was an interesting take. I was listening to Felger and Maz. I was suffering through my car ride home from my work today, and I was listening to a little bit of their take on when a team who they don't face often comes into Fenway Park for the first game of the series, whatever it is. The Red Sox are offensively off the charts with what they're producing, considering it was the Reds. They said that when the Mariners came to town, when the Angels, one of their games, it was like 13-something. So they're seeing something of a continued trend here that's leading to believe that there's somebody on this team that is harping upon whether it's tipping pitches or signs or whatnot's going on. Doesn't it just feel gross? It feels gross to me that this is our team and what they do. It's just slimy, slime balls for Fenway Park.
Yeah, no doubt. It's becoming things that we're known well for, you know, and it's an unfortunate thing to be that's one of our popular problems. It's really crazy. You know, it's too bad today's game was postponed. I mean, you know, I know it's going to be played tomorrow, but Roman Anthony had a nice hit in his first at bat. Little cue off the bat down the left field line. What, Nick Diamond, what are you seeing from Anthony? You think he's starting to heat up now that he's been here for a couple weeks? You think that he can start being an impact bat this season, or do you think it's still some time yet before we see him really take a tear into the league?
I think he's starting to break out. His at bats are starting to look better. His approach at the plate is great. A couple things I want to highlight on. I think it was yesterday's game. Now, I'm not 100% sure. It might have been today. But he let like a fastball right down the middle go in like a 2-2 count, strikeout looking. He's just not experienced enough to be able to foul that off. He's looking off speed. He wasn't able to adjust the fastball. So a little bit of inexperience, but he's still crushing the ball. He's hitting the ball very hard. He's working deep into counts. When he's walking, his walks look great. I think he'll be an impact bat. I think the power will come later on in his career. I don't think we're going to have a 20 home run season. I think we'll have like 10 out of them, 10, 12, maybe whole season. But I think he'll be good enough. I don't think he's going to win the Rookie of the Year, but I still think he's improving. He's only 21. The at-bats will be there. I think he'll be a high on base guy. But is he going to replace Rafael Devers? Absolutely not. Not this year.
Big Face, your reaction on Roman Anthony and
all the prospects. The one that I am very focused on to see what the potential is going to be for moving forward is Roman Anthony out of them all. I like Marcelo Meyer. Don't get me wrong. I think the glove is, we've talked about this, gold glove-esque, but Roman Anthony to me seems like a special, special kid. And my eyes are locked on what he's doing. He is my go-to guy in the lineup right now that I'm going to be watching to see what he's going to do. And I love the adjustments we've seen in the past week. He's got his average up from what? It was a buck, actually it's like 0.5, 0.50, point whatever it was. He's up now into the mid twos right now, and it's steadily climbing. It's a guy that's trying to get used to Major League Baseball. That's why I didn't freak at the beginning when he came up. He needed to get his bearing straight on understanding how to play Major League Baseball. And to Nick's point as well, the 2-2 pitch that he took, he doesn't have the experience yet. He's going to get there. I wasn't super happy with the strikeout looking. I said to myself, you must have been guessing something else. I think he was looking for something off speed in that at bat. And it was late. I think it was the 7th or 8th or something that came from. But he'll, over time, will be fine. I don't love how much he's DHing right now. I don't like that. I'd rather see him get some time in the outfield to also fully develop. That's the biggest point here that I'm looking at, trying to figure out where he's going to settle. Is he going to be the left field guy? I think so. That's probably where it's going to happen. But again, it's a matter of what do you do with Duran? What do you do with Abreu? What do you do with Rafaela? So I'm curious to see what happens when the trade deadline comes. I still think Duran's good as gone. And then it's a matter of figuring out what happens with, you know, second base. Still think it's probably in our best interest that it's Trevor Story, but they're too stubborn to do this. They're too stubborn to. So Marcelo Meyer will likely be your second base. Story continues to stay it short. I don't love it, but it is what it is. So they're going to have to find homes for people. And then we also have Yoshida, who's rehabbing right now. So we have to figure out where he fits into all of this because he is the DH. I'm not throwing him in the outfield over the other guys' names. No way. So what are you going to do? You have such a log jam coming, and it's going to be interesting to see what does happen.
Yeah, that was the next topic that I wanted to bring up was about Yoshida's rehab. There was tweets today that he was going to be in the lineup. I believe Worcester was rained out as well. He was going to be the DH, as far as I understand. So, I mean,
love Red Sox Digest? And stop freeloading and subscribe already. Free subscribers get recaps, rants, and the occasional emotional breakdown. Just like Craig Breslow with the trade deadline. Upgrade to a paid subscription and unlock the full archive. Subscriber-only game breakdowns, behind-the-scenes audio rants, exclusive mailbag Q&As, plus live chat and post-game streams where we scream into the void together. And if you're a true sicko, become a founding member and we'll put you on the podcast. That's right, a guest appearance on Red Sox Digest. Hit subscribe. It's cheaper than Fenway beer and way more satisfying.
Is this a possibility now that he's going to get, you know, a couple, you know, maybe a week or two of rehab down in Worcester, and we're going to get closer to that deadline? They're going to bring him up. They're going to DH him, which means that we're going to get a platoon of Anthony and, I don't know, Rafaela, maybe Abreu. Maybe there's a little bit of a round robin there so that they can get Yoshida's bat in that lineup so they can try to identify whether they want to move forward with him as our DH, or they're going to go ahead and look on the open market for a trade. Nick Diamond, your thoughts?
My thoughts are Masataka Yoshida is not good enough to find at-bats for. I'd rather see Roman Anthony get at-bats every day. I'd rather see Rafael get at-bats every day. I'd rather see Willie Abreu get at-bats every day. If you trade Duran, which might happen, then Yoshida could be an everyday DH. But those other guys are better players than Yoshida. I don't care about ground balls to second base. I know he puts the ball in play and doesn't strike out much. But Masataka Yoshida is not a special hitter. He's a one-dimensional guy. He has one tool, and it's a hit tool, which isn't even that great. I just don't think we need to find at-bats for him. If we're facing a right-handed pitcher that doesn't throw very hard and we want to put him in the lineup, that's fine. But this isn't a guy that you need to find at bats for. I'd rather see Roman Anthony.
Well, I think part of the problem is the fact that you got Roman Anthony, who, you know, isn't looked at as maybe an outfield piece, especially in right field right now. He's looked probably more as a left fielder moving forward. And you've got Yoshida, who is a defensive liability. So if they were at least a right and a left combination, you can make the argument that they would probably DH both of them and platoon the DH spot. But it's a really hard sell right now. Unless they feel like they can bring him up and maybe showcase him. The problem is that even if they went that route, they'd be eating a lot of money on a contract. But speaking about trades, there was, switch gears a little bit, there was a little article I read today. Bleacher Report's Joel Reuter, he proposed a trade that would involve Sandy Alcantara. The Red Sox would get Alcantara. The Marlins would receive shortstop second baseman Franklin Arias, who is our number three prospect right now. The password, Joaquin Garcia, and right-handed pitcher David Sandlin. I'd like to get your reactions to that. Nick, face you first.
I just don't think it moves the needle. I just don't. It doesn't scream to me that anything's going to really come to friction from that. I think we have a bunch of 3, 4, 5 guys. I'm only looking at Sandy Alcantara as a 3, 4, 5, especially transitioning from the NL to the AL. That scares the crap out of me, too. I just don't think that does anything for me. I'd rather keep the password going down there. You know, the password is future. I would like to see what this kid does. And I really don't. I know the prospects, and I've always been one of those. You got to give a little to get a little. This just doesn't do anything to me. I think it's a pointless nonsense move if they move forward with it.
Nick Diamond.
If this was 2-3 years ago, I would be all over this trade. Do whatever you can to get Sandy Alcantara to Boston. He's under a good contract. He would be coming off of Cy Young in 2022, I think it was, 2023, whatever it was. But he's coming off Tommy John surgery. He's been horrendous this season. I know he's kind of getting a little bit better lately, the last like 3-4 starts, but he's been horrendous this year. So I'm not giving up that much trade capital for a guy that's probably not going to ever be as good as he once was. If Sandy does come back and pitch like a Cy Young, good for him, but I don't think it's going to happen in Boston. You're going from a big ballpark in Miami and the NL East without much expectations with Miami to coming to Boston with tons of expectations in a smaller ballpark. I don't expect him to get better. I expect him to get worse as the old kid ages and comes to the AL. So like you said, I would stay away from that. If they got him, I wouldn't be upset, but I do think that's a little bit too much. And if when it gets down to the deadline and a lot of teams are bidding for a guy like him who has a lot of pedigree, who has a lot of past success, I know he's not performing at the moment, but he has past success, teams are going to overpay, and I'm not getting in a bidding war for a aging veteran starter that might never be good again.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I mean, he is just shy of 30. He'll be 30 on September 7th. So you'd be getting him for his age 30 and 31 seasons. He has 2 years left. He signed through 26. So you'd get him for the rest of 25 and 26. So a year and a half, essentially. But there is a team option for 27. I'm not sure exactly what that amount is. But to give up so much control, and I'm a guy who is fine with giving up, you know, prospect talent for a bona fide major league front of the rotation starter. I have no problem with that. But my question is I just don't think Sandy Alcantara is a front of the rotation starter anymore. I don't know if it's just the fact that he's gassed or he's just not coming back well from the injury. But, you know, that trade piece, I wouldn't do it because I want to hold on to Garcia right now. We don't have a lot of right-handed power in the system. I believe, I could be wrong, Diamond, you'd know better than I would, but I don't think there's a lot of right-handed power in the system. You know, if you want to swap that out with somebody left-handed, I might be a little bit more open to it. But I think to give up your number three prospect, your number five prospect, and a pitcher for Alcantara, it's just too big of an ask.
Jim, the other point I was going to say, too, is I'm just done with the MASH style of baseball. These injury-prone, let's take a flyer, let's see how this one's going to do. We already know how much Walker Buehler blew up in our face. I don't have any confidence with Alcantara getting back on track here. I just don't. So not with this system here that's happened. You know, the biggest trade deadline deal that I think this organization could do is to tell Kennedy and Breslow to park it and get the heck out of Jersey Street. I think that would be everybody's dream. Dream come true. Fenway Park would be that. Because then we could finally start talking about change.
Well, the other part of it, too, is he's got an ERA close to 7. So it's not like you've been, you know, you're going to get something that he's been really great.
Also. And great.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, you're going to make a trade for him, and it's almost like a reclamation project right then and there.
Oh, I'm just so done with it. I'm so done.
I got a question. Who's been a worse signing, Walker Buehler or Corey Kluber?
Oh, Corey Kluber still.
I think so.
I still think, because I can't even tell you a start that Corey Kluber at least gave you a competitive game.
Yeah, I don't think he did.
I think I'm still waiting for. I'm still waiting for Rich Hill to sign again with the Sox. I'm still waiting for it.
Didn't he sign a deal with Kansas City?
Yeah, I think.
Oh, they'll release him and he'll come back. I'm still waiting on it. Breslow's going to throw the meteor out. Hold on, folks. We got a big deal coming. Rich Hill's coming back. Here he comes.
Rafael Devers' career so far as a Giant, he has a 200 batting average, 2 home runs, 5 RBIs, an OPS of 670. He has 8 walks, 21 strikeouts, and 50 at-bats. Is just this a little blip in the Rafael Devers career, or is it possible that he's not suited for the Giants? Your reactions.
Rafael Devers will be fine. That ballpark sucks for hitters. Hitters going to die out there, but Rafael Devers will be fine. He'll be fine. He might not be a 280, 38, 35 home run guy out there. He might be a 275, 30 guy, but he'll be fine in San Francisco. He's too good of an offensive talent to not be. So it's just a struggle, new location for the moment, but he's too good of a player to not be great.
Nick Face?
It's a mental struggle with him. He's in a new place, new beginnings. I expected this for him. To go to a whole new organization, a whole new experience. It's like the weight of the world is probably on his chest trying to perform and trying to do something there. Now, the ballpark. I think his numbers are going to dip there. No doubt. No doubt. The ballpark is a pitcher-friendly park. It's going to take away home runs. It's going to do all that. Is it going to impact the career over the long haul? I don't think so. Because, again, you play, what, 81 games there and then 81 other games on the road. So, law of averages, things equal themselves out for the most part. So I still think he's going to be Rafi Devers. It's just interesting that it's been kind of like the very first couple weeks of Devers, to tell you the truth, when we started the season, when everybody was flipping out. I was one of them. And it was ugly as you know what. But he worked himself into figuring it out, and I'm very confident that he's going to do the same.
Yeah, I think he will too. Scoreboard watching a little bit. You look at the standings in the American League East, and, you know, the Yankees have really been kind of dogging it a little bit of late. You know, they obviously, when the Red Sox played them, they were not having a really good midst of games for a while. Then they kind of came out of a little bit for a little bit, and then they're kind of, you know, showing some signs of where again. They're on a 2-game losing streak. The Toronto Blue Jays beat them today. The A's just took a lead over Tampa in the 10th. Tampa's only was a game and a half out, I believe. This is starting to tighten up in this AL East. And, you know, for as crappy as the Red Sox have been all year, to be hovering around 6.5 games, I mean, you're facing the Reds. You're going to face the Nationals, and then you're going to face the Colorado Rockies. 9 games. You got to go 6-3, 7-2 to be able to say to yourself that this team has a remote possibility. Nick Diamond, what do you agree or disagree?
I'd say 8-1, honestly. You have to sweep the Rockies. You have to lose one between the Reds and the Nationals. You've got to be 4-5 games above 500 when you get Bregman back. And then I say, go for it. That's my only shot to go for it. You got to be 4-5 games above 500 when Bregman comes back. If not, I start thinking about selling off guys like Chapman and other pieces that are gone after a year. I do think it's encouraging that the Yankees are not that good. The Rays, I don't see them being great. I do think they get Shane McClanahan back this year, so they're going to have reinforcements coming. The Blue Jays, I think they're going to fall out of it eventually. I don't think they're that great of a team either. So I think it's nice that the Red Sox are only 6.5 games back. They're lucky to be only 6.5 games back. But there's still a lot of teams ahead of them. I think the Angels are ahead of them at this time. The Rangers and them have about the same record. So there's a lot of teams you have to play better than to get back, really back in this race. But they're not completely out of it. So I guess that's good.
Yeah, I mean, right now they have to leapfrog the Angels. And, of course, Tampa, Toronto, and the Mariners have, as of today, have wild card spots. So you still got to flip-flop two in order to maintain it. And you're tied with Cleveland in that. Texas Rangers are only a half game behind us. Nick faces
the Red. Yeah, I was going to say pretty much the Red Sox broke the Yankees. They broke them.
Yeah, Nick Face, if you were the GM, if you were Breslow right now, what is the Red Sox record got to look like in this 9-game stretch in order for you to have confidence to say, I'm going to add to this team?
Bare minimum 6. And what'd you say? It's an eight game stretch.
9-game stretch.
6-3. 6-3, that's about, you know, a little bit better than the amount of wins and losses, but I think that's the bare minimum. I need 7-2. It's got to. You got some of the worst teams right now in baseball playing up against. I mean, yeah, the Red Sox still are one of those organizations and teams that just were mediocre. We're not that good. And again, the AL East, it sucks this season. It does. So the Red Sox are really lucky right now to be in a position where they have been pretty terrible to even be even considered to be a buyer here in this trade deadline upcoming. It still blows my mind that we're even talking about this now.
Keep in mind that they've won the first game. They're up 2-1 in the second game. If they go anything less than 7-2 or 8-1, it's a disappointment. They've already won game one. They're already winning game two. Mm-hmm. You can't go 6-3. That means you lose this game, and then you lose two more after this. That would be bad against the Nationals and the Rockies. I think you have to go 8-1, 7-2 at least at worst.
Yeah, the only reason I'm 6-3 because I had to think like a robot. I had to think like Breslow. That's the only reason I gave those numbers. I don't love it at all. I think it's terrible. If you go 6-3 over this stretch with these teams, just sell. You're done. So you got to sometimes think like an idiot. I'm not saying I'm the idiot. We have other idiots that run this team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement. I think 7-2 is the bar for this because, you know, if you can't show a consistency to beat up on shitty teams, then you're not going to be able to be any good even if you get a wild card spot. I mean, it's bad enough that they went 4-3 against the White Sox. I mean, that was a disgrace. You know, and how they played against, you know, the Twins, how they've played against the Angels, it's just been absolute dog crap. And there's no way that you can look at that team facing those teams and say, yeah, I can see them being a playoff contender. So the only way to win me back over, truthfully, is they've got to go 7-2, 8-1 in this stretch. Give us some more confidence. Get the guys feel a little bit more better about themselves. Hopefully score more runs like they did in yesterday's game. Make that a thing now instead of just having one game where they just absolutely annihilate pitching and then the next night lose, you know, 2-1. And that's what they've got to do. They've got to have more consistency, score 5, 6, 7 runs a game, you know, get decent pitching, bring that into, you know, the middle of July and force Breslow's hand to say, listen, you got rid of Chris Sale. You got rid of, you know, Rafael Devers. You've brought in guys. You got to be able to give us some reinforcements. Go out and get a right-handed power bat to add to this lineup. Yes or no? Nick, what do you think?
I don't think they're going to add a right-handed bat no matter what. I think it's Bregman. And then I think they're going to maybe add to the starting rotation if they add. And besides that, I think they're done. I think they will say Roman Anthony will try to replace Rafael Devers. Alex Bregman's coming back. The Yoshida, Rev Snyder platoon will be part of it. And if they add to anything, it'd be pitching long term.
You hit it. You hit it right there. I'm echoing the same statements here. Bregman's coming. There's our big trade deadline move. Yoshida, he's rehabbing. There's another bat. Feel good about yourself, Red Sox fans. Those are your goodies that are coming. I don't trust Craig Breslow as much as I can throw him. I just don't. To him to make a big move to bring something in, guys, it's not going to happen. It's just not. Fool me once, shame on me. But fool me twice, no, it ain't happening.
No, I'm in your camp. I think the chances are very slim. You know, if you're going to go ahead and get rid of a guy that's been on your, you know, been in your organization since he's 16 years old, you've given him a $300 million contract. Why are you going to go out and bring some other guy in that you don't know, other than the fact that he might have an expensive contract that you're going to have to take on? It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But with that said, I am going to go ahead and call tonight's show. I'd like to thank Nick Diamond and Nick Face for joining me tonight. And please go ahead and sign up to our digital product on RedSoxDigest.com, where we post articles daily on not only the reviews of the game from the night before, but also some interesting commentary. We have a daily and a weekly publication. That's RedSoxDigest.com. Have a good night, everybody, and we'll see you next time.